follow between 8 a.m. and 9 a.m.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to FPC Radio Live. It is Wednesday. It is March the 25th, 2020, and that right there is the sound of no sports going on. Still, we are about 12 days deep into this nothing happening phase, although we were fortunate enough to get a little bit of a respite from that because of some exciting NFL free agency news. Of course, Mike and I, my co-host, have talked about that ad nauseum, so we're excited to bring in this week, or today, our good buddy Kyle Senner. He is our FPC Packers and Fantasy Football Managing Editor. Kyle, how are we doing today?
Pretty great, Ian. As great as we can be with, again, with so few sporting, or yeah. With zero sporting events to
yes.
watch. I know I'm taking the time. I'm reading Vince Lombardi's Run to Daylight book. So that's been pretty insightful and very, wow, that man was dedicated.
That's the thing I'm thinking about it too. Like, you know, what sports books, what things have I put off for a while that I can kind of sneak back into the daily routine? And I must say, before I forget, that is a fantastic shirt that you have on. I'm distracted by it. I can't even focus because it's such a great shirt, which is available at the Full Press Coverage store. You can go to dsgentry.com/fullpresscoverage. And yes, folks, I know you might be concerned. You might be concerned that you don't hear Mike's voice. Don't worry. He will be here in just a few minutes. He likes to, he likes to make a big scene when he shows up. He's fashionably late, as always. But, like I said, he'll be here. He'll be here. So don't fret. But, no, we're bringing on Kyle because, great insight. We love talking to him. And, of course, we want to kind of pick someone else's brain about what the hell's going on in the NFL right now. Because, really, it's the only game in town, literally and figuratively. So, Kyle, it's been an interesting few days. Couple, notable players switched teams, and I'm holding back some some emotion because I'm still dealing with it myself. But obviously, I'm talking about DeAndre Hopkins moving from Houston to Arizona. It was a gut-wrenching move that I'm still just not quite getting over. But
Because you're such a big Bill O'Brien
yes,
fan.
Yes, that is correct. If anyone knows me, they know that I am Team Bob. I'm still trying to figure out how he still has a job, let alone how he got promoted and how he continues to keep his job. That is a mystery that I just have not figured out yet, and I don't know if we ever will. But So real quick, before we get Mike on here, because he's obviously going to be here in a couple minutes. Just initial impressions of what you've seen. What stood out to you the most in this free agency? And if you say Tom Brady, then I'm just going to cut your mic off. No, I'm joking.
Well, I think first off was early in free agency, we were hearing a lot about certain positions, mm-hmm. linebacker, offensive tackle, really the wide receiver and running back signings came a little later, and the quarterback signings were kind of in the middle there. I know we had the Tannehill news pretty early, yes. And then we were kind of left to
biggest
wait for everyone else.
News of the offseason.
Well, right now, I believe Tannehill's the biggest contract that's been signed this offseason. So.
Even is that more than Kirk Cousins' extension? Would that count if you're counting?
I think total amount, yes. Because
yeah.
I don't know the Cousins extension is like the total over 4 years.
I think
per
it's like,
season.
I think
yeah,
it's
I guess
like
per
67,
season.
He got at like million or so. He got added to his current contract. So I don't know what the total amount is, but I think that's the new amount.
Mm-hmm. Per season, it's probably the Cousins one. You're correct. I guess for me, it was seeing a lot of 3 year contracts and on players for opposite reasons. And I'm looking at two players who left the Packers, for instance. Blake Martinez and Brian Bulaga both signed identical 3 year, $30 million contracts, and mm-hmm. two players kind of at the opposite ends of their career. It does seem like Martinez signed 3 years instead of four or five, so he could get another second big payday 3 years from now. Whereas Bulaga signed 3 years for the opposite reason, because this is probably his last big payday. So he wants to make this, because he's at, you know, he's 30, he is 30 right now. So, you know, him getting 3 years out of that, I think, is about as much as any team would have offered. So 3 years for two different reasons. But we're seeing a lot of that, that, you know, players around that $10 million per year mark as well at various positions, linebacker, like I said, offensive tackle, even tight end. And then, of course, the quarterbacks got big money, but that was expected.
Yeah, no, and you know, look, I think there's a, you know, you talking about just how things are operating. Obviously, we're all operating with, you know, a little bit different mentality and focus because of everything that's going on. And, of course, that's going to affect how some of these, you know, free agency deals get done. And maybe it was a little bit slower start outside of the normal you know, outside of the normal quick day one or day two signings during that tampering period. But, I mean, in reality, it's, you know, people are starting to gear up towards the draft. And I was surprised that there were a lot more shorter deals. And I was also surprised that Amari Cooper got $20 million a year and kind of blew the top off that wide receiver market right away. But, you know, look, you know, if he's your guy, he's your guy. And for Dallas, like, you know, I felt like he was a pretty big you know, big piece for them to re-sign. Obviously, that the NFC is, in particular, the NFC South. You mentioned Tom Brady. I mean, that it's not just the Bucs, it's the Saints adding Emmanuel Sanders to that mix. Obviously, Carolina's probably the. what was that you hear there? No,
I think is there someone else here?
I don't know. Let me hold on.
I'm gonna between the shadows, my friend.
I was going to say.
Hello, buddy. How's it going?
I was going to say it's a very easy way to tell. All I got to do is play this and just see if I get a response.
Hello. It is. It's, you know, it's one without the other. You can't do the hello without getting the la 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 back. It is great to be back with you on the microphone, my friend, this morning.
You know, Mike, I started.
I was talking to Kyle.
Oh,
hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm kidding. How you doing, Kyle? Good to see you, man.
Yeah, you too. Great to hear from you, Mike.
Well, he's just a still frame at the bottom of the screen right now. He's actually been reduced to a very low pixel mount, so I don't even know if you can see him. But if you're trying to see what his,
that's probably a good thing.
Yeah. Well, again, like I said, I like rating, so we try to keep it as appealing to the viewer as possible. So now that my camera's reduced a bit and Mike is still continuing to be off camera, I think we're going to be doing pretty good today. So, no, back to business, Mike. Welcome. I know you like to make a fashionably late entrance, as always. That's, you know, it's just kind of your thing. You know, you kind of try to think you're a big deal and all that. And I get it. And I understand. I know you're waiting purposely to come on late. So, again, we could focus all the attention on you.
Mike, dramatic.
Yeah,
that's it. I make a dramatic entrance and I make a rather pedestrian exit. So that's been my MO and I'm sticking to it. I'm not going to deviate from that, folks.
Well, if I was really thinking clearly, I could give you some entrance music there, but nope, you came across and we're glad to have you. I kid, you know, he's really Mr. Rhode Island. Like I said, he's beloved in the Northeast. I mean, if you know, I'm not just saying it, I think he's probably the most popular and loved person in the Northeastern states of New England. So
I appreciate that. And you know, my good buddy on the other end of the microphone is Mr. Florida. He knows what he's doing down there. He's holding the.
Yeah. I'm securing the fort right now, buddy, because who knows what's floating around up there. I'm thinking. Oh, we cut out there. Sorry, I thought you were done talking, but how foolish of me. You never stop talking.
So. Oh, no, actually I was, unless yeah, you didn't catch the last part of it. I was done talking.
Oh, okay. Well, I was saying I'm trying to not hold down the fort, more or less secure the fort. I'm kind of looking for that whole, you know, when Springfield got put in a bubble during the Simpsons movie. That's kind of what I'm looking forward to here. But no, seriously, Kyle and I were talking about free agency and some of the, obviously, the more notable moves happening. Obviously, I think certain teams, particularly the NFC, is really, loaded up. I don't know if that's the right word, but I feel like the NFC is going to be kind of a knockdown, drag out fight. So, Kyle, I got to ask you, initial impressions. Obviously, we have months, and I mean, it could be even longer. Who knows? We have a long time before the actual start of the next season, and there's a lot of team building that goes into it. But initially, right now, where do you see the Packers in the hierarchy of the NFC?
Well, I mean, last season we had three teams in the NFC with 13-3 records, which was kind of insane. It was really a top-heavy conference. I don't even think we'll see one team get to 13 wins this year. It, like you said, it does seem, you know, a lot of deep teams. There's, you know, maybe 10, 11 legit playoff contenders. Mm-hmm. I still think overall in the conference, yeah, the Packers are among the teams that are in that really strong playoff race. I think they're probably still the favorites in the NFC North, mm-hmm. mostly because the Vikings lost basically their entire secondary, a few pass rushers, their top receiver. Well, I guess maybe not their top receiver. Some would argue it's Thielen. But, you know,
it still hurts.
Yes, absolutely. And they, you know, lost a lot of pieces without really bringing anyone in of note. I mean, receiver wise, really the only player they've brought in is a former CFL player who was great last year, Braylon Addison. Mm-hmm. And he's not the same player as Diggs. If anything, he's closer to Thielen. He's kind of the hybrid running back wide receiver type player, really good after the catch, actually really strong. You know, that's the type of player Zimmer wants, I think, as a receiver, someone who can run the football, not they don't have to throw. But yeah, I think the Packers, you know, it'd be disappointing if they didn't win the NFC North this year, I think. And again, should compete for, you know, top seed in the conference. Not saying that they're necessarily the favorites too, but you know, I'd be strongly disappointed if they're not in the playoffs next year. If there are playoffs next year.
Yeah. Well, like I said, we're gonna try to be very positive here on this show and optimistic. But
there will be playoffs. There will be playoffs.
Yeah, there will be playoffs. Playoffs. No. I agree. Look, I think the Vikings have clearly taken a step back. I mean, how can you not when you lose so much talent? And you said, you know, you can argue about if Stephon Diggs was truly the number one. The number one will take a hit without Stephon Diggs out there. Let's, you know, that's they fed off each other, you know, they were able to produce off one another's abilities and all that. And that's fine. That happens obviously all the time in the NFL, and it's time to adjust. But I would say the Vikings are definitely in a worse off situation than they were last year. And then you have the Bears. I mean, they still technically are going. Well, they have Mitch Trubisky. They have Nick Foles now. I don't know how much that really changes things. We'll see. So, yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think the Packers are clearly I mean, look, they don't have Jimmy Graham. That's a positive. That's addition without subtraction right there because, you know, again, it's I always compare it to, you know, those lineman drills where, yeah, there you go, big fist pump. And I just watched it on delay for a second. But, yeah, I compare it to those lineman drills.
I did too.
I compare it to those lineman drills where they put, like, tennis rackets up to try to emulate J.J. Watt, and that's Jimmy Graham trying to catch a football. So you can kind of see how that's just not going to be a successful way to do things. So I think the Packers are clearly the best team in that division. And then again, it helps that, you know, the NFC South is really, you know, that you could see potentially three teams that get into the playoffs out of the NFC South. Or they could just beat the hell out of each other all season and have one team kind of playing well towards the end of the year. I mean, look, this is not going to be an easy division. They're obviously there's a bit of an arms race going on down there, and you know, of course, the incumbent champion, the 13-3 Saints, adding Emmanuel Sanders, I think, is a big deal, especially for the folks out there that will not admit it, but Drew Brees, yes, he needs help. He's not going to get, I mean, unless he gets injured again, and then there's another can of problems, he's not going to get five games off to rest. And I think people haven't realized how much of a help that was for him, especially for, you know, yeah, it was a thumb injury, but, you know, he was still able to train and rest and, you know, kind of recover. Because we saw in 2018, towards the end of the season, he start to, you know, kind of fade down the stretch. And that, you know, again, that's generally what happens when you get older. There's obviously some exceptions, Tom Brady. But I think for Saints fans, you want to get him as much rest throughout the season as possible. And look, they have a lot of faith in Taysom Hill. I mean, they put a first-round tender on Taysom Hill. So, I mean, again, they obviously know more than us about him. But again, you don't have Teddy Bridgewater there now to, you know, hold down the fort during a 5-game absence or a 4-game absence. Because again, if the Saints lose a few of those games, like, you know, a lot of teams do when they have backups, you know, you're talking about a different situation. So I'll ask you, Mike, what I asked Kyle. But what is initially just like your biggest impression of this free agency, not necessarily just the free agent signings, but trades and kind of the movement we've seen over the last week or so? What stuck out to you the most?
The balance of power that really is shifting, and it really started last year, but the balance of power that continues to shift in the NFC. I mean, we've talked about this several times. You look at some of these teams that have either improved or dramatically improved. In the case of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I think immediately they are a playoff top seed contender. And I'm not saying they're going to automatically win that. I think there are a lot of teams in the NFC that we've described today that are more than capable of being able to win that conference. But I think you look at the Saints and the moves that they've made. You mentioned Emmanuel Sanders. I think that's probably one of the more intriguing moves I've seen so far, giving Drew Brees that inside slot threat with the ability to play on the outside. Sanders still has a lot of burst in those legs, and I think that that could be a very big-time addition for them as well. Some of the other teams, you mentioned the Bears, and you know, you don't really know what kind of a quarterback, what kind of a system a quarterback is going to be able to succeed in until you see this. This may be the hand in glove fit that Nick Foles has needed since he left Philadelphia. So if that's the case, automatically they're a little bit better now. And I know, you know, you look at that division and you look, and I've got a draft question for Kyle coming up in a little bit when it comes to the Packers, but you have to imagine they're right there. I like the additions that they've made in the offseason and what they're trying to do to make sure that they're a more formidable candidate for a top seed in the NFC. Don't forget, folks, this year we're looking at a conference now that's going to have only one seed get a first round bye. And of course, we're talking about the AFC as well, but there aren't going to be two first round byes anymore. So those wins, regular season wins are going to be more at a premium.
Technically, that would be the following season, but correct, right? Or am I just saying, because doesn't this kick in 2021, not 2020?
No, I think the new seeding rules kick in 2020. The 2021 rule is the 17-game season.
I was under that impression as well that they were pushing for the playoff teams this upcoming season.
Okay. All right. Well,
I believe that's the case here. I think that would be with the one seed right now. But no, in all actuality, I mean, even if it's not for any reason, and I do have that wrong, and if I do, I apologize, but even if I do have that wrong, it's still trying to... Yes. That's right. Amalgamated Association of Morons, Local 6th and 7/8. But in any case, that really, to me, I think defines a lot of what we're seeing. So, yeah, I think definitely the NFC, a lot of noise being made there. And I think it's going to make for some real interesting matchups, particularly in the South.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, if the South is still here by the time the season starts, because, again, it's, you know, we kind of, you know, make light of the situation. But of course, we obviously want everyone to stay healthy. We just, you know, kind of dealing with uncertain, you know, when things are going to start. I think the NFL recently basically shut down kind of team facilities and all that. Yesterday, I think it was, until at least April 8th when they can evaluate. So everyone kind of, you know, again, is ordered to go work from home. So again, we don't know how that's ultimately going to affect how the season starts, when training camp and all this. So we're under the assumption everything, just like the NFL is, that everything is going to start on time in terms of the season. So regardless, I mean, even if it does start on time, we still have such a long time to go in the off season. There's so many more moves, and Mike, you can attest to this because, of course, you cover the Patriots, as I follow the Patriots and everything like that. But getting to know some of the Tampa fan base over the course of the last week or so, they're getting that sense of trepidation, that sense of fear that they're not doing enough. And I'm gonna write something today. Hopefully, I'm gonna get it out today. I have a few things I'm getting out today, but it's basically going to, you know, urge them to just, you know, have a little bit of patience, because this is a team that, like, you know, like the Patriots and like other championship teams, you're seeing in Kansas City right now, is generally they're going to make more of an impact in that secondary free agent market. During you get a little bit closer to the draft, you're going to wheel and deal a little bit. You're going to find out what teams are losing veterans that aren't necessarily going to be on the radar right now. I mean, we've seen it time and time again with the Patriots, where they kind of wait for those cuts later in the summer, and then they kind of swoop in and take these guys and turn them into productive players. And you know, I look at teams like, again, you see the Chiefs kind of doing the same thing. They've been relatively quiet. Tampa, obviously, outside of signing Tom Brady, you know, have been more about taking care of their own, which is again a good thing. But for everyone paying attention, you think it's not. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen in the South. Obviously, I have a close eye on Tampa and, of course, Brady and everything like that. But I'm going to shift gears a little bit. I'm going to throw this at Kyle from a fantasy standpoint, because you know he's got two gloves on here. He's got the Packers glove and he's got the fantasy football glove. So we're going to kind of bounce ideas off of him. The NFC South, out of any team, who do you think stock has gone up the most? This could be quarterback, receiver, running back, defense, just in general. Who do you think's like just gonna just kind of whatever stock up?
So which team or which player? Sorry,
player team. It doesn't matter. Like maybe it's a team defense. Maybe it's a specific quarterback. Maybe Mike Evans' stock has gone up higher than it was before. So
well, if anything, I might say Tom Brady, because I mean this collection of weapons he has. I mean this might be one of the greatest offensive, receiving capabilities that they've had. I mean, I still say they're missing a running back. I'm not the biggest Ronald Jones fan, but having Chris Godwin and Mike Evans and OJ Howard to throw to, I mean, the last time Brady's had that three receivers that strong, Gronk in his prime, Edelman and Brandon LaFell. I don't know. Right.
Well,
like, so,
well, the closest, in terms of like, Mike and I have talked about this. I think both Godwin and Evans both graded over 90 with Pro Football Focus. And again, you can take that with a grain of salt, depending on how you value their grading system. However, the only other time that Tom Brady has had that was Randy Moss and Wes Welker. So they did a little something in 2007 that was pretty good. So I'm not saying that they're going to turn into those two, but yeah, sorry, go ahead.
And then one player, I think actually one receiver their personal situation didn't change. They're still on the Panthers as they have been the last three seasons, but the pieces around them kind of make me wonder if this particular player will see an uptick in targets and just success all around. That's Curtis Samuel. Mm-hmm. So you've got Teddy Bridgewater who comes in and, the deep ball isn't necessarily his strong suit either, but last year Samuel was kind of operating as that deep threat receiver for the Panthers to kind of stretch the field and everything, and Kyle Allen really wasn't able to connect with him deep. But now they just yesterday just signed Robbie Anderson, who I think comes in as the field stretcher and will allow Curtis Samuel to return to his natural position in the slot. And I think if he does that, he and Bridgewater could find a connection there. So I think this move actually really helps Curtis Samuel. I don't think it really helps Robbie Anderson's fantasy stock, because I don't know that he's going to see the target share on a team with Christian McCaffrey, DJ Moore, and Curtis Samuel. But yeah, I actually really like this move for Curtis Samuel.
Yeah, and look, he got a nice chunk of change, Robbie Anderson. I mean, what, $20 million over 2 years? I could be misremembering this, but I think it was $12 million in guarantees. So, I mean, that's a good little payday for a guy who was making, I think he made like $3.5 million last year. He got a nice little boost. So, unfortunately for him, his dream of playing with Tom Brady is obviously not going to come true, although he will be playing against Tom Brady once again twice a year. So, yeah, look, I agree with everything actually you just said, because again I like the prospects of and I've been a big proponent of Brady not having lost the step. So I think you add in these receivers, I kind of like the DeAndre Swift draft. If the Bucks can somehow pull him off in the second round, I think he would be kind of a perfect complement to what they have now, because they need someone who can catch passes out of the backfield and someone who can, be on the field and make plays. And he's a guy who can do that. And then, again, there's like I said, the secondary receiver market. But Evans, Godwin, they're going to produce. But Brady, again, if he is still the quarterback, which I believe he is, Still the quarterback that can make the plays. He hasn't lost a big step or anything like that. His stock's going to go up for sure. I think he could push 30 touchdowns just because of the personnel behind him. I think it's and the way Bruce Arians calls plays. You know, he's gonna challenge him and put the game a little bit on his shoulder. And look, I mean, he threw over 600 passes last year. I imagine he's not going to all of a sudden drop down to 450, especially in this offense. So I imagine there's going to be a little bit more production out of that. So, Mike, you still there, buddy?
I am okay. Still here, my friend. I am still among the living.
I always got to do a health check, and by health, I mean the...
you got to make sure the old man hasn't fallen asleep, so I think that's always a good thing. You know, you always keep me open, keep me awake, that's good.
Yeah, there you go. Or just a gasp of just like... It's like, oh, well, there he is. He's gone. What about you, Mike? We're kind of the same question, like, in terms of stock. Actually, I'll ask you specifically. Brady stock, you think it's skyrocketing here fantasy-wise?
Fantasy-wise, I would say so. And I know you're not supposed to put emotion into these types of things, but I will say this. The emotion that we're getting and the emotion that we have from someone like Tom Brady that is motivated now, I think, more than ever to prove how good he is, exactly what he's going to be able to do. And, you know, just something that I believe is really, I think it's important to him this year, maybe more so than in years past. Brady is highly motivated to put up numbers. He's highly motivated to win. And I think that do you take a look at the supporting cast that he's putting out this year? You guys mentioned Godwin and Evans. Perriman, it was somebody that I was really hoping that the Bucs might be able to find a way to bring back. I thought that it probably would be a salary move not to bring him back, and it doesn't surprise me. But I was hoping to see him in this offense as well, because his ability to make contested catches really adds another dimension to Brady's game. And you mentioned Swift earlier, Ian. I think that would be an excellent addition to this team. But a motivated Brady is a dangerous Brady. And you mentioned the last time that he had two guys that were graded over 90 in Pro Football Focus when it comes to their gradings, they did something pretty special in 2007 with Randy Moss and Wes Welker. So I'm not saying that he's going to be that prolific, because I don't think Brady is quite the same quarterback that he was. Well, now we're going back 13 years ago. It's amazing to talk about that. But at the same time, absolutely. And at the same time, he has a lot left in the tank. I watched him last year during practice. I watched the zip that he had on his ball. You take a look at film, you don't see a decline. I don't care what people say about, he's not throwing this or he's not throwing that. Tom Brady is not throwing ducks out there, folks. If he has the right receivers to be able to catch his passes, he's going to be prolific, and I look for that this year. So, yeah, if you're into fantasy, I mean, Kyle is the guru. Listen to him more than any of us, but I would say, buy on him, because I think he's going to put up some pretty good numbers in Tampa Bay.
I like that. We might have to get a shirt. You might have missed it, Mike, but Kyle did his very guru pose. Very, very statuesque. You know, maybe we'll put get a shirt together like that.
I was going to say, T-shirts being made should be absolutely right there.
T-shirts pumping out. But again, I don't want to jinx Kyle, because as I mentioned off the air, I have this horrible, horrible way of just destroying anything that I put on a t-shirt. And for example, like I said, I have Winston Evans 20 shirts up there. I have Brady Belichick 20 shirts up there. You know, the list goes on. I have an Antonio Brown shirt up there, and we all know
I was just gonna say it was still booming on that.
I feel like Pastrnak's having a good season, a pretty great season, though. So those shirts happened for him.
As soon as I put that up there, the season got canceled. So And the whole mantra, anything is possible, is kind of turning into now anything is possible, except for the resuming of a NHL season in which the Bruins were by far the best team in the league. But you know what? We're not going to get into that. I don't want to get angry. Actually, you know what? No. I don't want to get angry. I want to relax.
So there you go, folks. Right here on FPC Radio Live, we have broken news that all of the problems in professional sports right now, Ian's fault. Hashtag it's Ian's fault. Yeah. Get that trending, and we'll go from there. No, I'm just kidding.
At me at IGLEN31, folks. I value the followers and the attention more than the actual vitriol. So it's okay. I can handle it. If you want to blame me for it, blame me for it. The evidence is there for you. Just go to dsgntree.com/full press coverage and see for yourself what I'm talking about, folks. No, I. Look, there's certainly people to blame for certain things, and I think one thing that I would do if I were a Houston Texans fan, and we mentioned this briefly, is I would put all the blame on everything that is wrong with the Texans on Bill O'Brien. And, you know, I'm not going to harp too much on it because I think people understand my feelings about it. And, you know, if you listen after the playoff game last year, it was a mess. I thought he should have lost his job then, but hey, who am I? He got promoted. That's maybe why I'm not an NFL GM, among many other reasons. But we'll keep it strictly to football here because I think, you know, perhaps it was inevitable that DeAndre Hopkins had to be moved. There was clearly some sort of disconnect, whether it is in terms of money or just philosophy or personality. It wasn't ultimately getting to the point where they were going to be able to fix it, so he had to move. However, it felt like they got an incredibly underwhelming deal. And to me, I look at Arizona and, like, I mean, they could, you know, I mean, really, if you think about their collection of wide receivers, you can make a very strong case that they might have the best unit in the NFL. I mean, obviously, Larry Fitz, DeAndre Hopkins, Andy Isabella, I mean, UMass, woohoo, yeah, all right, yeah. But, I mean, it just, again, it's a sneaky, scary offensive unit that I think is, you know, just not being talked about a lot. And, again, that's, you know, for a lot of reasons. There's just, you know, obviously Tom Brady can dominate the headlines in many different ways, and he's certainly done that. But again, they just, you know, they're looking like an exciting offense. Are you guys getting the same vibe? And yeah, it's just that's a team I'm going to want to watch from both a football and just a fantasy football standpoint.
I mean, you were talking about the South, the NFC South, and how difficult it is. The NFC West now. I mean, I think going into the season, it was already the best division. I don't think they've done nothing but increase that, I believe. Yeah. I mean, if they had seven playoff teams last year per conference, they would have had three, with the Rams being that seventh seed in the NFC. Probably follows through this year with that. I mean, I think all four teams really do have legit chances to make the playoffs. So that entire division race.
I'd say the one difference is, though, I think every team in the NFC South got better. I don't necessarily think that's the case. Not yet. I think San Francisco, yeah. I mean, even if they took a step back, they could still be the best team in the division. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that I don't think they've improved, and I don't think Los Angeles has necessarily improved. But
they've lost some players. They've lost some key guys.
Exactly. So. But at the same time, I mean, even losing those guys, I still think that that's an incredible – that's another division where it's like you could get all your playoff teams. If it was legitimate, if you could, you could get all your playoff teams from those two divisions and you know, maybe not Packers fans might not be happy about that. But, you know, in reality, it could make for a very entertaining playoff run. But that's, you know, this is fantasy land we're talking about here. But I guess the, you know, speaking specifically about the Cardinals, you know, we talk about whose stock rose in the NFC South. How do you see this impacting DeAndre Hopkins? Now, he saw obviously a large volume of targets with Houston, and he was the guy in Houston. Larry Fitz is not Larry Fitz anymore, but he's still, I mean, he's still Larry Fitz. Let's be real about it. Anytime you doubt what he can produce, he's going to double that. So how do you see this impacting DeAndre Hopkins, and you know, how does this, you know, affect the quarterback?
Well, I think, first off, you know, not knowing the full offseason schedule is going to be tricky. How much time is Hopkins going to have to work with Kyler Murray? That being said, Hopkins has made it work with some pretty horrendous quarterback play throughout his career. Yes. So, I mean, with Kyler Murray, I know he's just going to be entering a second season, but based on pure talent, it's probably, you know, not very close. Like, it's clearly the Watson and Murray are the two best quarterbacks he's played with. And I don't think it's particularly close after that. So I think he should do all right. One thing I like about the Cardinals, their pace of play, the number of plays that they actually will run, which could help the overall pass attempt amounts. Expect Kyler Murray probably going to get more. How many pass attempts do you have last year? 542 as a rookie.
That's impressive.
So with, I mean, if he can maintain that, I mean, both Christian Kirk and Larry Fitzgerald saw over 100 targets. Got to think with Hopkins coming in, both of those numbers are going to go down and it's going to all feed through Hopkins. Now, fantasy wise, he was probably a top two wide receiver anyway, mm-hmm. going into the season. I think from a redraft perspective, I don't think I would drop him out of the top tier completely, but I think I'd rather have the guys that are having consistency at quarterback year to year, having the same quarterbacks they had last year. I'm looking at Michael Thomas with the Saints, Devontae Adams, Julio Jones, even with the Falcons. I think I'd probably take those three ahead of Hopkins, wide receiver wise. But after that, you know, Beckham might be moving. Juju, we have no idea what's happening with that quarterback situation. I guess maybe Tyreek Hill. So, mm-hmm. I could see maybe Hopkins at wide receiver five. Yeah. But I don't know that I'd go much lower than that.
Yeah, and I think you brought up a good point. It's like, you know, I think, you know, a guy of DeAndre Hopkins' talent and abilities, you know, it's not going to take him long to adjust with other quarterbacks into the mix. You know, I feel like it's going to be a pretty easy transition. However, you know, when you don't get that normal scheduling, say OTAs are postponed or changed, and maybe it takes you a little bit longer to get into that off-season program, you know, perhaps that's going to affect how they, you know, obviously start to gel together. And of course, you know, when it comes to Hopkins, eventually he's going to get it. So, you know, again, it may just, you know, delay the inevitable, which is, you know, this entire offense gelling, which I think it's going to be, because I think they're all very complimentary players to them. I mean, Larry Fitz can play inside out. Obviously, his size and just his IQ and everything, playing him inside and being able to play him off DeAndre Hopkins. I mean, it's enticing, and it's a great look for Kyler Murray, who is obviously looking to have a solid second season. It's just, you know, again, you hope that you can get a somewhat normal full off-season program in to kind of get him adjusted quickly, because again, there's opportunities in the AFC. For the first time in a very long time, there's questions about what New England is, and again, I'm not one of these people that think that they're going to fall off. I'm intrigued, and I'm very excited to see what Jarrett Stidham has, and see what kind of leaps he makes from year one to year two. And I mentioned this earlier, especially a team like the Patriots, who are dealing with cap issues, given where they are right now this season. You know, they got to get creative, so they're going to hit that secondary free agency wave. They're going to try to build through the draft and make some trades and make some moves to clear up cap space, so we don't really have an idea of what they are yet. Buffalo certainly looks to have improved greatly. The Jets, again, losing Robbie Anderson, adding Breshad Perriman, that, you know, could it be a wash? Yeah, probably. It just all kind of depends on who Sam Darnold is next year. Is he going to have a solid 16 full games to produce and grow? And is the Adam Gase effect going to take over? Is he going to, you know, stunt that growth a little bit? We don't know. So, I mean, there are a lot of questions. But for a team like Houston, who just kind of, again, I don't know what they're doing. I feel like they're, which is kind of, you know, they're wasting Deshaun Watson and who knows? I mean, there's rumors out there that it could present other opportunities for him. But hey, look, there's opportunities in the AFC. Kansas City's good. We know Baltimore is good. You know, again, I'm assuming New England's still going to be good, and I still think that they're going to compete in that division. This is certainly not a done deal for them. I mean, it's foolish if you think so. So I guess in the AFC, who's really sticking out to you as like, you know, that top tier level of teams, Kyle? And then I'll throw it to Mike, because I know he's chomping at the bit to talk.
Well, I think Houston, they weren't that far off. I mean, they were up 24-0 against the against the Super Bowl champs, right?
So, and what team, did they do?
they blew it, punt. Right? And now they've continued to blow it and gotten worse to the point where I don't think they're the favorite in their own division anymore.
Yeah.
Even though they lost Jack Conklin, we might talk about that a bit more later. I still think that's the Titans right now in the South. I really like what Baltimore did, not so much free agency, but the trades, getting Calais Campbell, in a trade with Jacksonville, who apparently is deciding to just trade away everybody. They forgot it was free agency period and thought it was the trade deadline. But yeah, so I think, you know, Baltimore, I expect, you know, them to build on what Lamar Jackson did last year. And, it, you know, they obviously, it came crashing down in the divisional round. If Jackson is mature enough and that whole team can move forward from that and learn from that and take things away from that game and improve, that'll really help them actually in the long run. So I would still see Baltimore, who were the number one seed last year in the AFC, being right up there with the Chiefs as probably the two favorites in the conference. In terms of who got better, really, you know, if the Raiders were going to start Marcus Mariota, I might say him, because even with the, you know, as poor quarterback play they got from Derek Carr, they were a 7-9 team, and you know, improve, you know, just average quarterback play probably would have got them close to a playoff spot. So I think if Mariota can go in and win that job, you know, maybe the Raiders pop up. Yeah, you're right. I think I guess the Bills are probably right up there next in the conference. Getting Diggs will certainly help Josh Allen, and that defense, that secondary is still one of the best in the league. So I think the Bills did a good job of improving themselves.
Yeah, and I guess I'll swing that over to Mike, because I mean, I guess that's the most relevant team to him right now in terms of, you know, watching teams grow and improve. And I do think the Bills improved. They've been trending upwards anyways. And then again, you add another receiver. Now, again, it, just like it was last year, a lot of this falls on Josh Allen's shoulders. That's why, you know, again, the quarterback is the most important position in the NFL. You could put all these players together, all these pieces together, but if Josh Allen is erratic when he's passing and he can't get the ball to Stephon Diggs, well, how good is Stephon Diggs if he's not getting the ball? So, and again, I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm just saying, you know, these are the question marks. So, Mike, what do you think about the Bills and just the AFC in general?
Yeah, I agree with Kyle on a lot of points that he made. I thought he hit some great points. First of all, with the Bills, you have to admire what they've done this offseason. And look, Stephon Diggs is going to be the big ticket item that people are going to remember from their offseason. I think their most underrated signing this year was re-signing Quentin Spain on that offensive line. He brings such an amazing amount of stability, and he was someone that, you know, he's not going to light the world on fire with his statistics or with the eye test, but what he does behind the scenes to add the anchor that they need to add, to me, is something that I really was, when I saw that, to me, it showed me that the Bills were hunkering down, keeping the key members in place that they needed to keep and add pieces around it. And I think they've done that brilliantly. You mentioned the Baltimore Ravens, Kyle, and the trade for Calais Campbell and bringing people in that are able to complement what they did last year with Lamar Jackson. Look, this is a number one seed. A lot of people forgot that because of their early exit in the playoffs, but this is a team that's capable of coming right back and showing the same type of dominant spirit that they showed all season long last year. It all begins and ends with the champs. I mean, Kansas City has not done anything to significantly hinder themselves from being able to ascend to that level again next year. They still have one of the most prolific offenses in the league. They still have a much improved defense. Ian, a guy that you and I know pretty well, and Mike Pennell just re-upped to return to them. I think a lot of people underrate what he meant to that team this year. Shortly after the Super Bowl, I read an interview with Steve Spagnuolo, who just absolutely could not praise Pennell enough. And it makes you wonder what happened in New England, whether it was just a fish out of water type deal. But he came in and said that he added so much stability to that Kansas City team. So I really, really like that. You mentioned the Houston Texans earlier. And Ian, I can't let that statement go by when you said about Bill O'Brien and you says, that's why I'm not a GM. Well, all it made me think of was the Seinfeld line where Kramer tells Jerry, but he is, and he's the one getting promoted. So that's it. That's exactly, you answer the question. There it is. I mean, he's obviously ascended to that level because he's in that seat. Yeah, the Texans, I think, have taken a major step back. And I agree. I think that there's probably a question as to whether or not they're even the favorites in their own division. In my mind, I agree with Kyle. I think it's the Tennessee Titans. So those are the two. Those are the teams right now to keep your eye on. I will say this, folks, and of course, you knew I was going to bring it home with this. If you're sleeping on the New England Patriots and assuming that this team is going to be a cellar dweller this year, don't do it. And I'll tell you that, don't do it. I'm not saying pencil them in for the number one seed, because I think that's a very lofty goal. But this is not going to be an also-ran team that's just going to roll over and take the lickings that everybody is going to give them. This is not a franchise that tanks. I can tell you there's no tank for Trevor. There's no lose for Lawrence. I've spoken to a few people that are close to the organization, and off the record, they've basically said that that's completely asinine. And I do agree with that, and I believe it, because it's just not in the makeup of this franchise to just roll over, especially when they know that Tom Brady is going to be highly motivated to show them that they made the wrong decision, quote unquote, by not showing a little bit more urgency in trying to sign him. They're going to want to win, and they're going to want to prove that they can do it. I think Jarrett Stidham is the guy. I've watched him in practice. I've seen him in training camp extensively. We watched him in the preseason. I like the way he can step up, make throws. I love the way he's able to read. Scouts have told me several times that they love the way that he's able to pick up a defense. This early in his career, it's very rare. There are some arm mechanics that I'd like to see him work on. Stepping into his throws a little bit more, I think, is something that will help him. Obviously, that seasoning that he's going to need is going to help him out. I think bringing in Brian Hoyer was a smart move to mentor him and be able to be that type of guy that even if Jarrett is not ready for prime time when the regular season finally kicks off, if they need to start Brian in a couple of spot starts, he will hand the keys over to Jarrett without making a fuss about it. And I can't really say that about some of these extracurricular additions that they were talking about, you know, guys like Andy Dalton and even Cam Newton, who I really love for this team, or and I really think has a lot left in the tank. I just don't see the Patriots doing. First of all, I don't think they have the financial situation to be able to afford them. And second of all, I just don't think it's the right fit. So, you know, there's a lot there. Watch out for the Los Angeles Chargers, folks. That's gonna raise a lot of eyebrows, but I really like the addition of Pelham in the tight end position, giving him that option with Hunter Henry in a two tight end set. Austin Eckler is an every down back. He can handle it. I know they lost Melvin Gordon, but they still have Keenan Allen in that wide receiver core. They've got two very good tight ends. This is still a team that has a great defense. If you add a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback to that mix, Cam Newton, this might be a team that might raise some eyebrows. I'm not saying championship contender, but they may be a spoiler for a lot of people. So keep a sharp eye out for them.
Yeah, I was always, I know Anthony Lynn, you know, is obviously big on Tyrod Taylor. And, I was kind of curious as to why, you know, not why, but, you know, that they really committed to him when especially, again, I like that fit for Cam Newton. I feel like that is a good place for him to go play. And again, if I were them, I would seriously consider taking a stab at it because, again, there's talent there. And, I mean, there's still talent out there. I mean, talk to about 50% of Buccaneers fans and you'd think, you know, Jameis leaving was the worst thing ever. And, look, I think the Bucs are better without him, you know, because of the guy that they got. But that doesn't say, you know, that doesn't mean that Jameis isn't still a capable quarterback. I mean, yeah, you can talk about the interception totals all you want, but, you know, maybe put him in the right situation. Maybe a change of scenery is good for him. Maybe, again, a team like Miami, they seem to be married to Ryan Fitzpatrick. But, you know, if I was Miami, maybe I'd say, hey, you know what? You know, maybe Jameis is a better, you know, gives you a higher ceiling, especially in what you would think could be a pretty wide open AFC East. And then, of course, Jacksonville, it's like I think they like Gardner Minshew. But, are you like 100% sold on Gardner Minshew, you know, as an organization, as a fan base? Why not bring in Jameis Winston or you know, maybe Cam Newton? I do think Jameis is a better fit in Jacksonville, but I think there's still a lot of shakeup to be had in this league and even at the quarterback position. I mean, I think there is talent out there, and I'm with Mike. I want to see where Cam Newton goes. Like, maybe in a different universe, maybe this is a situation where, like, yeah, it would be nice for the Patriots to pick him up and see what he has, but you know, like Mike mentioned, the cap situation is not there. The Patriots have about $25 million in dead money right now this year. So $25 million committed to players that aren't going to be there, most of which being obviously Brady, and then the Antonio Brown situation is still looming. And fire alarm. So is that you, Mike? You good?
No, that's just, I got to just get some stuff on the stove.
Okay. On. Well, you know, don't let your apartment burn down, please. But anyway, so yeah, there's a lot of openness in those, that bottom two-thirds of the AFC, I think. And I'm going to be interesting to see how it all unfolds. And again, there's a lot more intrigue, but I do think the NFC is the more far more stacked division, and I think has the strongest teams. And I think it's going to be a fun exercise to watch. So, folks, this creeped up on us really quickly, but it's 9 o'clock, which means we got to go. So we appreciate you tuning in. Check us out on at Full Press FPC Radio Live. Of course, you can go to at Full Press Radio. Download the Full Press Coverage app. I can't say it enough. It's convenient to listen to all of our shows, including this one, and of course the Full Press Fantasy Podcast and the Full Press Packers Podcast, hosted by our guy right here, Kyle Senra. And of course, give him a follow at NYAMA_KS. And Mike, have a great day, my friend. We'll talk tomorrow. And
you as well, bud.
That's right. All right, folks, have a great day. We'll see you all tomorrow.